Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability with acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's always a pleasure to know that you're listening. I'm looking forward to sharing with you about the power of love. And I'd like to start off by saying how grateful Frank and I are for the presence of Tony and his lovely wife, Chloe, in our lives. They've both been such a blessing, a wonderful blessing in our lives. And I personally think that they were sent to us by my dearly departed English grandmother, Noni. You know, our deceased loved ones are always watching over us. And when she passed, she said, you know, darling, if there's ever anything you need, you know, just ask. I'll be able to help in some way or another. And, you know, then here they come, fresh from her home country with their son, Leaf, and he's been helping us to sort out all manner of things and details, especially in regards to the world of editing and agents and publishing. And so I just wanted to express our love and gratitude. So thank you, Tony.
Well, thank you so much, Josephine. And it's completely reciprocated. And I'm not sure who I have to thank, but I'm very grateful to you.
It's probably Noni.
Thank you, Noni.
Yeah, and I hope that all of you have had a wonderful Christmas and a lovely holiday season. And here we are coming to the end of the month, and it's wonderful to be meeting with you all again. So thanks for tuning in.
If you're new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she has empowered thousands of people from all around the world with hard-to-diagnose and chronic health problems, giving them support and guidance in their journey back to wellness. She has also been a spiritual mentor and teacher to hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love. All of our programs are about psychic ability, and for the month of December, we've been exploring subtle energies. Our topic today is Love Trumps All. That's such a wonderful topic. I'm really looking forward to it. But before we came on air, we received a question about that topic from Fran in San Luis Obispo. And this was in response to the email reminder that we send out every week about the show. And if you don't currently receive that weekly reminder and you would like to, then all you need to do is give us your email address. And you can do that through the box on the left-hand side of your screen, or if you're listening on the phone, you can go to Josephine's website, stepintomagic.com, go to the contact page, and put it in there. We do treat any emails that we receive in the strictest of confidence. We don't hand them out to anyone. So let's get on with Fran's question, and it really is a good one. She writes, it is easy to love sometimes, especially in families it can be more challenging, when there is a rift between father and son or mother and daughter, and there is a great tightness in the heart. What are some of the methods to get unstuck in the fear, drama, sadness, confusion, and great expectations of those who feel their needs are not being met or were not met in the past? And now the current condition is like a tornado when one witnesses this emotional turmoil. How I want to choose peace mentally, yes, and spiritually, yes, yet physically the tightness and tiredness in the body is painful. How does someone tap into the subtle energy of love then?
Wow. I'm so glad, Fran, that you've asked this question, because I think that this is a question that many of us have right at this time of year. You know, when we get together with our families, that's where our original buttons were created. And so they can definitely get pushed at this time of year. And so I'd like to go into detail and answer this question as best I can. But before I do, I always like to start our show with our spiritual agreement. And this was given to us by my mentor, Jana Massey, and I'd like to ask that you all make this agreement with me. It goes like this. Together, we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good, and together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I agree.
Great. Thank you so very much. So, yes, you know, I think that As I've said before, the foundation of our spirituality is to be appreciative of the gift of life and to have fun and play and laugh and to see our lives as a piece of God. And that's really what we're here to do. But we can get caught up in the drama. But just beyond the veil of drama is pure love. There is no sin. And I think that everything that we do is actually perfect and part of divine order. And so just starting from that kind of a placement is a good place for us to kind of get rolling with this question. But I would say, first of all, you know, just take a little step back and just let yourself become a little more objective, sort of from that watching bird position. You know, there are the five yogas in Hinduism, and there's the bhakti yoga and the junta yoga, and the one yoga that I really relate to is the one of the watching bird, where you have the bird that is on the tree of life and it's busy engaged with all the other birds, and they're, you know, coming and going, and it's fighting for its territory, and it's bringing little worms to the nest and whatever it's doing. And then there's the other bird that is just a little ways away on the tree, just watching, just observing the whole thing. And there's been a part of me that has sort of just naturally picked that up somewhere along the line. And I think that a lot of the teachings of the great religions of the world just come out of humanity. You know, there's wonderful wisdoms in all of them. And that's one that I think just was sort of almost a universal wisdom that we all have, that we can have that slightly removed perspective to just witness and watch. And so that's one thing that I would recommend right at the start for you. And then, of course, to go to spirit. And this was something that my mentor, Jana, often reminded us of, that spirit is all around us, it's present with us, that we are never alone, that spirit is always with us. And just like I was saying about my wonderful grandmother, Noni, who, you know, I think is always watching over us, and all of our deceased loved ones, my mother, my dad, you know, there are so many that I feel their energy and their spirit sometimes when I'm in my deepest, darkest sort of tornado times of my life that occur. And we all have them. And they're here for our growth. These big events, these big emotional response events, these are opportunities for us to grow with. And we can use them, I think, especially if it's a sort of a drama-focused one, we can use it as an opportunity to search back into our memory, to find what the original pain was. This is especially true if we find ourselves overreacting, like if something... I once had an experience where, you know, a teacher asked me a question and I burst into tears. And I had to realize that the reason was because there was an early experience when I was in childhood where an authority figure was, you know, asking for information and I just couldn't give it because I'd had a truly horrible experience occur. And I just wasn't capable physically of responding. And I had to realize that this teacher, when he, you know, 20 years later asked me this question, I went right back to that place when I was 11, and I just couldn't deal. And I'm sure I shocked him just as much as I embarrassed myself with my tears. But these are opportunities for us to go back to find the original pain and then to do the forgiveness work there. And another thing that the teachers, through my mentor, Jana Massey, would say is that forgiveness is the law of erasure, and that it erases the hurt so that the truth can be made known. And I think that that's a wonderful thing for us to keep in mind, that we can move through our pain and we can find what the truth is behind it by moving quickly to forgiveness. And so, you know, to take a step back and to kind of come to that watching bird perspective, and then to realize that we're never alone, we always have spirit with us, and then to move quickly to forgiveness, when we can, and then also to ask for help. So often we forget to ask. And one of the little prayers that the teachers gave us was, angels here now. And so sometimes when I find myself right in the throes of a turmoil or in the midst of a tornado, I'll just silently affirm, angels here now. And then also, all needs met. Om Tu Pa is the phrase that they used, all needs met. And with doing that, I just affirm that that is what my reality is and that is what's going to be happening. Another exercise that I sometimes do that you might enjoy is I'll go back and replay the past. So let's say that there was something that happened in the past that I don't feel good about, or that, you know, I feel that somebody else wasn't so great in. I'll just replay it in my mind in meditation as if the most perfect thing happened, what I would love to see happen. And somehow that just sort of loosens the hold that I have on that memory, and it just allows some different options. I'll try to feel the feelings of the preferred option. And then one of the things that my other mentor, Peace Pilgrim, who wrote that beautiful book, Her Life and Work in Her Own Words, she says to see the good in others, and that when we see the good responds and looks back at us. And so sometimes when we come to people, we come with them kind of with that idea of, uh-oh, here they are, what's going to happen? And I do this myself, right in the midst of family, you know, uh-oh.
I think we can all relate to that.
Yeah, we can all relate to that. And if instead I look at them and I think, oh, here's the good about this person that I totally love, you know, isn't that amazing? What a wonderful thing. Then they will respond in kind. And Peace Pilgrim says that the nations of the world are very poor psychologists because they tend to come at each other with defenses up and, you know, fighting and for their position and for their holding their stance, you know, instead of coming at towards other nations and saying, oh, you know, what wonderful nation you are, what beauties you have to bring to the world. And so, you know, that approach is of course, why we get into so much trouble. And her point being, as she was a peace pilgrim, you know, trying to make peace, trying to find peace. And she has these wonderful magic formulas. One of them is to try to be sure that you don't offend rather than that you are not offended. I think that's such a beautiful viewpoint to look upon. And, you know, just to move into the, and then also to, you know, seek the resolution of the conflict rather than the gaining of advantage. And so when we're in conflict, rather than, you know, trying to get our stance and get our point across, if we just go for what's going to bring resolve here, what's going to diffuse and disarm this situation and bring a resolution to the conflict, that's a great thing. And then, you know, it's so easy in our families especially to take offense, you know, because like I said, this is where our buttons were originally created. So if we can just instead step back and a little bit and let our focus be on not causing any offense. So, you know, I have family members that I know have certain beliefs. Well, I don't talk about my beliefs that are in contrast to theirs. I just talk about something else, you know, some interesting thing on the news or some unique tidbit. Like Frank got a book for Christmas, and in it it said that cows, you know, milk cows in different areas around the world moo in regional dialect. Isn't that extraordinary? So, you know, I might bring up something like that instead of, say, you know, a political topic or something that might cause a little more strife or discomfort. And I try to keep it light. I think about the conversations that I might have, and I try to see the good in them and to be grateful for what's before me. And, of course, all of this requires knowing myself, knowing who I am, knowing how I, you know, might want to take a stance or do something, and then loving myself anyway, just exactly the way I am, and moving ahead with, you know, some thoughts and some ideas as to how we can maintain the peace in the environment. And, you know, I think that God's purpose for our sorrows is to connect us with our hearts, heart to heart, and that's a really good thing. And then you mention the physical pain, and this does definitely happen. Yes, we get very, very tired in our bodies, and we really do feel that physically. And I think a lot of that comes from the holding, where we get tight muscles and we start to hold our muscles. And, of course, Tony, you know a lot about this with your Alexander work,
mm-hmm.
and how emotional pain can get stored in the body a little bit.
It's very common, yes.
Yeah, and of course it's our attachment, as the Buddhas say, that is at the root of our suffering. And so here we have, you know, emotional pain that is kind of winds up being held like an attachment in the body almost. And then we wind up suffering physically as well as mentally. And, you know, our suffering is the most powerful impetus on the planet for change. It really brings about change. And so to be grateful right there, just for that little bit, oh, thank you, body, for reminding me that I do have attachments in my emotional body and that is creating holding patterns in my physical body. And thank you for bringing this to my attention so that I can begin to release and let go. And, you know, change is good. Change is the only constant in the universe. It's the one thing we can really count on. And so embracing change is a lot easier than resisting change. And then lastly, I'd like to say that, you know, when I'm going through these tornadoes and when I feel the swirling, you know, storm around me, I try to give myself some tender, loving care. I take myself out into the beach, and I'll dig a little hole and bury myself in there and just get my legs and my belly and my body, my torso, under the sand and let the weight of those sand crystals sort of weigh down on me all around. And, of course, this works for people who live somewhere near the shore, the ocean. But there's sand also on riverbanks and things, too. And then one of my favorite ones is to go underwater or to get into a pool or a lake. I prefer lake water or something like that that's natural water because it really does give my body a chance to relax deeply. It's almost like you can, you know, just really let go when you're in water. If you have a flotation device or if you're like me, if you float like a cork, you can just really deeply, deeply relax. And then, as you know, I'm really practical, so I go to the healthy food store and I get some, for myself, I'll get some homeopathic arnica and some homeopathic hypericum. Those are for nerves and sore muscles and strains and sprains. And I'll take a little bit of that, or I'll get some Alexander technique with our friend Tony here and remind my body that it doesn't have to hold on, it can let go. And then additionally, you know, here we are right at the holidays, and there's all these wonderful solstice and Christmas and Hanukkah parties and Kwanzaa, and we want to go ahead and eat all of that white bread and white sugar. That always has an effect on my body and creates more holding patterns in my body, I've noticed. And so, you know, the questions that I like to ask myself is, how am I doing on white sugar, white flour, you know, chocolate, alcohol, of course, no tobacco or any of those things that we know are not that great for us, caffeine especially. Why do we want to get jittery and amped up if the emotional climate is high already? So those are some good questions to ask and to try to minimize those in the diet. And then the proteolytic enzymes like Vitalzyme or Cerezyme or Wobenzyme, those really help to diminish you know, or clean up the damage inside of the body where there has been strains or sprains, and so in response to the physical pain. And you can ask your healthcare, you know, assistant at the healthy food store for advice on that. And so I hope that this is of help to you, Fran. It's my little strategy and what I do when things get a little bit heavy duty on the emotional turmoil point of view.
Thank you so much, Josephine. Oh, I'm sure Fran and I certainly found that answer to be most helpful.
Good.
But before we go on, I do have a question about love as a subtle energy. Can you tell us a bit more about in what way or why you consider love to be a subtle energy?
Yes, I'd be delighted. Well, because love is not usually like a physical force. It's not what we consider like a physical force, like an ocean wave. It doesn't have a body that it lives in, love, unless it's living in our hearts. It's more of an emotional nature than a physical nature. It's one of those unseen, intangible forces whose presence or absence profoundly affects our well-being, as Fran with her question just pointed out. And so that's why I see it that way.
Okay, I get that. It's not a physical thing, but
yes.
it does act
yes.
like an energy in a way.
Yeah.
It changes the feel, the quality of things. And things change in response to, I can see that, you know, physically.
Yes, absolutely.
When we feel loved or we feel love, there's definitely a physical change, you know, in the body. Okay,
yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, there was that wonderful Time magazine article that came out some time ago. I think it was like 2010 or 12 or something. And it was about Eben Alexander, and he wrote the book, I think it was called Proof of Heaven. He was a neurosurgeon who had a bacterial meningitis in his brain, and he had a journey to the afterlife, and I think he was in a coma near death for a week or something. And his thoughts on this was that consciousness exists beyond the body because his cerebral cortex was completely shut down. There was he was under medical observation, and there for I think it was a full seven days, and the CAT scans, the CT scans showed no global cortical involvement, which they felt it was a medical impossibility for anyone to be conscious during that kind of experience. But yet he had this remarkable journey where he was among flocks of transparent, shimmering beings, and he found himself in the company of his in utero twin, his sister, who had passed before he was born, on the butterfly wing, a giant butterfly, and she was looked like a butterfly. And then he felt these huge sounds and like a booming, glorious chant from on high, and the sound was palpable, almost material, like rain, he described it. And then he felt that seeing and hearing were not separate in that place. And with that, Tony, I wonder if you could show the first slide there. Maybe you could read it out for us.
Certainly. Okay, so it's a beautiful image. Thank you, Frank.
Yeah, thank you.
I could hear the visual beauty of the silvery bodies of those scintillating beings above, and I could see the surging, joyful perfection of what they sang.
Isn't that great? And I'll read a little bit from one of the articles that was written. And he said, everything was distinct, yet everything was also a part of everything else, like the rich and intermingled designs on a Persian carpet or a butterfly's wing. It gets stranger still. For most of my journey, someone else was with me, a woman. She was young, and I remember what she looked like in complete detail. She had high cheekbones and deep blue eyes. Golden brown tresses framed her lovely face. When first I saw her, we were riding alone together on an intricately patterned surface, which after a moment I recognized as the wing of a butterfly. In fact, millions of butterflies were all around us, vast, fluttering waves of them dipping down into the woods and coming back up around us again. It was a river of life and color moving through the air. The woman's outfit was simple, like a peasant's, but its colors, powder blue, indigo, and pastel orange, peach, had the same overwhelming, super vivid aliveness that everything else had. She looked at me with a look that, if you saw it for 5 seconds, would make your whole life up to that point worth living, no matter what had happened in it so far. It was not a romantic look. It was not a look of friendship. It was a look that was somehow beyond all these, beyond all the different compartments of love we have down here on Earth. It was something higher, holding all those other kinds of love within itself while at the same time being much bigger than all of them. Without using any words, she spoke to me. The message went through me like a wind, and I instantly understood that it was true. I knew so in the same way that I knew the world around us was real, was not some fantasy passing and insubstantial. The message had three parts, and if I had to translate them into earthly language, I'd say they ran something like this, and I'll quote here, "You are loved and cherished dearly forever. You have nothing to fear. There is nothing you can do wrong." And then he goes on to say, the message flooded me with a vast and crazy sensation of relief. It was like being handed the rules to a game I'd been playing all my life without ever fully understanding it. Isn't that beautiful?
Yes, it really is very beautiful.
And those three statements, you are loved and cherished dearly forever. You have nothing to fear. There is nothing you can do wrong. I think that is so freeing. And it also really addresses, in a way, too, Fran's question, you know, what do we do when we're caught in these turmoils of emotional distress, really? Well, just to understand that there's nothing you can do wrong, I think really helps us to be okay with who we are and to love ourselves anyway, to move beyond that prison of shame and blame and guilt right into love, respect, and allowance, to free ourselves, to really open ourselves to love and to, you know, just be who we are. So anyway, I thought that was a lovely little thing I wanted to share on the subtle energy of love.
Yeah, well, it's quite an amazing story. So all this happened when the machines that he was rigged up to, did you say it was CT scans and
yes,
things, were showing that nothing was happening in his brain
right
at all?
No global cortical involvement. You know, they felt that was a medical impossibility of being conscious.
Okay.
And they were ready to pull the plug.
Okay, it's just fantastic. So can you just then explain for me the relationship between that, what's happening there, and the subtle energy of love?
Mm-hmm. Well, our consciousness is all about love, and love is the sustaining energy of our beings. And this means that love is the most primal or fundamental subtle energy of all.
Of course, when you say it like that, you know, it makes so much sense of so many things.
Yeah.
That this is the what's there at the essence.
Yeah, yeah, it's really beautiful, isn't it? And Peace Pilgrim had a very similar story that she relates in her book, which I mentioned earlier, Her Life and Work in Her Own Words. And she said that she was walking one night and a blizzard came in, and pretty soon she just couldn't tell if she was walking on the road or off in a field somewhere. And she was very, very cold in her little lightweight tunic and her tiny little, tennis shoes. And she began to get a little delirious almost, and she saw a group of people off in the distance, and it was warm, and she could begin to hear music, and she said it was more than earthly music. And then she heard sound that she said was more than earthly sound, which is very like what Eben Alexander explains. And then she saw a woman who had passed on, who was there standing in that group, and she looked much younger and prettier than she had at the time that she died in her middle age. And she came forward to Peace, and then she waved her back, and she was like, "No, no, go back, you're not to come." And Peace Pilgrim said that right then she ran into the railing of a bridge, and she stumbled her way down underneath the bridge, where she found shelter. And there she found a large cardboard packing box, and it was filled with newspaper. And she got in there, and she covered herself up with all the newspaper, wrapped herself up, and there she slept. And when she woke, it was a beautiful sunny day, and the snow was melting, and it was lovely out. Isn't that a great story?
That really is, yes.
Yeah, and then I have often mentioned in the past, too, one of my very, very favorite books was written by my friend Lee Lawson. In fact, that's how I met her. I read her book, and I just thought, oh, my gosh, I have got to call this gal. And we've become fast, fast friends ever since. And her book is called Visitations from the Afterlife, and it's about true stories of love and healing. And in this book is one of my most favorite stories of all. And if you'll please pardon me again, I'd like to read to you just a little more. It'll just be about a minute or so. This one is called Miss Hadley's Children. And this is how, it's an example of how the subtle energy of love was so strong that it manifested into human form. And so here's this from Lee's book. It's by, the contributor was Charlotte R. Turner. So my first teaching job was at Hadley Elementary School in a tiny three-room rural schoolhouse. The students were divided into two groups, my group of first, second, and third graders, and Lydia's fourth, fifth, and sixth graders. The schoolhouse was originally an old church building converted into classrooms by the town's first official teacher in 1926, over 30 years earlier, to serve the small village and surrounding farming community. We were feeling the chill of mid-October poised on the brink of winter. Only the week before, a new modern gas furnace had been installed at the schoolhouse, finally replacing the decrepit one, which had needed replacing for at least 10 years. That ancient boiler furnace hadn't been dependable for heat for a while, and it made terrible noises that frightened the children and teachers alike. After endless pestering by worried parents, the district council finally had a new modern gas furnace installed. Tuesday, after lunch, when we were having our weekly art session, a woman burst into the classroom and, addressing the children directly, said, "Now, children, go as quickly and quietly as you can. Take your coats, go outside to the benches on the far side of the field, and stay there until I tell you to come back. Now go, quickly, right now." The children stood up and immediately and started for their coats. The woman was calm, but the urgency in her voice was clear. She spoke with absolute authority, so much so that I found myself saying, "Now hurry up, children, let's go outside quickly." As I started herding the class out the door, I didn't stop to wonder who she was. As we got the last child through the door and into the field, the woman turned to me. "Make sure that all your children are there with you, and stay there. I'm going for Lydia's group. Now hurry." I marched my baffled children across the field into the cold, cool, crisp, chill air. As we went, I could hear Lydia and the woman talking excitedly, and then sounds of the other children leaving the classroom to follow us. Her voice more urgent now, the woman hurried the older children through the door, ordering them to go quickly to the benches. Now take Flora's hand and run over to the bench, she called out to one child as she herself grabbed the hand of another one of the smaller girls. Lydia was half running, half walking alongside the children, saying, You don't understand. Impossible. It's less than a week old. In less than a minute, we were all gathered at the benches about 50 yards from the schoolhouse. Lydia and the woman were speaking, both animated and insistent. But you don't understand, Augusta. The furnace was replaced. There's a new one now. It's perfectly safe. It's brand new. Lydia, you aren't listening to me. The furnace is going to explode. Do not take these children back into that school. Oh, now I understand, I remember thinking. She must be one of the grandparents who was worried about the furnace and doesn't know that they put in a new one last week. With a look of exasperation on her face, Lydia was trying to convince the woman that the old dangerous furnace was gone. Trying to stay calm, Lydia went on. I know that your concern is for the children, Augusta, but there is nothing to worry about. It's cold out here, and I need to get these children back inside. Some of them are out here without coats. The school is my responsibility. Listen to me. I will not have any of my children hurt. Do you understand me? I will not. At that very instant, the schoolhouse exploded and burst into flames. 34 gaping students and 2 astonished teachers were riveted to the spot, watching in horror as the school burned before our eyes. Lydia sent 2 of the older boys to get help. We were counting the students when help came, and along with it most of the people from the town and surrounding area. It didn't take long for them to discover that the furnace had been installed improperly and had a faulty gas valve on the pipe that led from the tank. The new furnace blew up the school. The irony was lost on no one. After a confusing, exhausting day, I finally got home in the early evening, ready to sleep for a week. At only 7 o'clock, I was already in bed with a cup of tea when the doorbell rang. My husband answered it, brought Lydia back into the bedroom, and pulled up the rocking chair next to the bed so she could sit down beside me. When Tom left the room, Lydia and I just looked at each other and started to cry. Our tears were a mixture of exhaustion and relief. What if? Thank God. Thank God for that grandmother, were my first words. She saved our lives. That's why I'm here, Charlotte. Lydia was choked up, and it was difficult for her to speak. That wasn't one of the grandparents. That was Augusta Hadley. She was the teacher who started the school back in the 20s. But I thought Mrs. Hadley was dead, I interrupted. Looking down for a minute, Lydia started to cry again. She is. When she was calmer, Lydia told me that the night before she'd dreamed of Augusta Hadley, warning her that the school was in danger, that the furnace was going to blow up. Lydia woke up thinking that the dream came from all the years of worry about the safety of the old furnace, so she just dismissed the warning. As it turned out, no one ever asked Lydia or me how we happened to have all the children out on the field when the explosion took place. Everyone was just so grateful that we were all safe, but I guess that it never occurred to anyone to wonder. It was a real miracle that no one was in the building when the furnace blew up, they all said, for many years to come.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
That really is.
I mean, that is the power of love.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me that last month you mentioned Angie Printup, who collects stories about people who have passed and reach back in all sorts of wonderful ways to their loved ones to express their love. And if anyone listening is interested in sharing such a story, you can do so at her website, which is www.heblewherakiss.com.
Yes, and that story of He Blew Her a Kiss was a wonderful little story from Angie's website, where a man was so bereft at losing his wife that he blew up a helium balloon, and he wrote that he loved her on the balloon and set it free into the air and just blew her a kiss, you know, with the balloon. And then the next morning he drove to work and found that balloon on the doorstep of his office when he arrived. Isn't that something?
Yes.
Yes, there's more than meets the eye here. So, yeah, thank you very much, Tony. Now, I'd like to mention about healing hands and Reiki. You know, these are the subtle energy of love used for healing. And I've mentioned in the past my friend Cassandra, who was an animal communicator, and she would come to the barn and she would, you know, work on a bunch of different horses. She'd sign people up for the day, and when she would put her hands on a horse in the barn alley, you know, all the cats and dogs and even the mice and the birds would all come around and just, you know, sort of soak up that running love energy that came from our hands. Because, you know, our hands are extensions of our hearts. Our hearts, the energy moves out our arms and down into our hands. And, you know, we know this as little kids. If we fall down and skin our knee, the first thing we do is put our hand on our knee. And it really makes it feel better. And so that Reiki or that positive thought for healing, you know, loving our bodies and helping them to heal with the love and the touch of our hands is another wonderful form of subtle energy that we can use. And, you know, didn't you do a little looking into this one, Tony, about babies who don't thrive? They become sick if they're not loved?
Yes, I think that, I certainly heard about the experiments that were undertaken with monkeys that were deprived of a mother's love. They were given like an artificial mother, just, you know, a machine that would give them milk, and then they all became very disturbed. But I think it was during the 1980s in Romania, they were overwhelmed with babies in their orphanages. Because of the, I think it was the policy on abortion.
Oh, yes, right, the anti-abortion policy.
Yeah, it resulted in their orphanages being overflowing. Mm. And the babies, they were like institutionalized. They were fed and they were cleaned, but nobody ever spoke to them or did anything with them. And what they noticed was that these babies did not grow and they became very sick. And, you know, some of them died.
Mm.
And at first they thought perhaps this is because they came from families where there was lots of issues, so they came in very sick. And that explained why this was happening, because at the time people did not believe that babies could be so responsive to what was happening around. But then when some of them were taken out and fostered, some of these same babies, and in ordinary families, they grew normally and they didn't become sick. And then they began to realize it's something about being in that environment where you don't get any love from anyone when you're a baby that just makes you ill. We seem to need the affection, love from other people.
And I think it is more than makes us ill. I think that, you know, we can, when we have those early pains, you know, when you're a little kid, if somebody says to you, "Oh, it's going to happen next week," that might as well be forever, you know, and it seems so long, and things get sort of blown out of proportion when we're a little tiny person like that. And if mommy and daddy leave us for a few minutes, you know, that feeling of abandonment is huge, and we cry and cry as if that was the end of our lives. And in some cases, of course, it could be, and in some situations, it might certainly seem like that. So, you know, those are big things, and I think that those kinds of emotional traumas in our infancy we can stuff it, you know, because their love has been denied or love has been cut off from us, and we wind up stuffing it with other things like, oh, you know, maybe addictions or our minds. We might move up to our minds instead of our heart and become very good with, you know, whatever facts and figures and things. Or we might move the other direction down into our second chakra and, you know, have other kinds of problems along the lines of misguided love and trying to find our way into healthy, loving relationships. It's really something.
I see that we have a question from Laura in San Francisco, and she writes, "I am loving this topic about love, but I'm also curious about what you were going to say last week about feng shui. Is there a connection?"
Thank you, Laura. And yes, everything is connected. You know, in a nutshell, feng shui is about the subtle energy of placement. It's about flow and how energy flows through your life and through your home. So, Tony, maybe you can rummage around there and find the slide that we had last week for the Bagua. Do you think you can?
Yes.
Okay, good. So if we think of the home as an extension of our body, then, you know, there is an understanding that, you know, energy does flow through us. It flows through us in a variety of ways. And we can look at how it enters and how it leaves and notice the direction that it goes. Now, you've got the slide there, Tony, of the Bagua. Maybe you can just sort of read it off a little bit there.
Well, it says Feng Shui basics, and we have like an octagon, And then around the eight edges, we have various words or phrases. At the top, in the north, we have fame and reputation. And then in the next one, we have marriage relationships. And the next one, creativity, children. The next one, travel, helpful people. The next one, career. The next one, knowledge. And the next one, family, ancestors, and health. And then the last one, abundance, wealth. And they all have a different color. And at the very center, it says earth. And underneath, we have water feeds wood, earth creates metal, wood feeds fire, fire feeds earth, and metal creates water.
Yeah, this is a little bit more about that five elements, traditional Chinese medicine, and how these different elements do create energy in our lives in different ways. And the elements correspond to various bodily organs, and then they also correspond to the home. If we look at our home as an extension of our body, then we can see how the different elements can apply to the different places in the body. So I don't know if you can take a screenshot of that little, what they call the Bagua, the little feng shui map. And then also, of course, there are many, you know, wonderful people available who do feng shui work. And in some of the basics, you know, you try not to have clutter in the house. You try not to have clanging doors. If there's some sort of a problem, like a low-hanging beam, you might put some flutes or something there to kind of raise the energy a little bit. Or drains that might be in a inauspicious place in the house, in a bathroom, you might put a shell over the drain to prevent the energy just flowing down and out of there. Or maybe you might use a red thread. 9 inches is supposed to be one of the nice numbers for length. And then dangle perhaps a prism from that in a place that needs a little more light or energy. And so a friend of mine did some feng shui for us for our house at one point, and so we have these lovely things around, little bits of thread, red thread holding prisms and a few flutes here and there, and it's just lovely. It just sort of helps us to remind us that we have good energy moving through the house, and it just kind of creates a more positive feeling within our body-mind, and that, of course, influences the love energy in us, and when we are thinking positive thoughts, we're a little more open to that heart energy. And so that is sort of how I look at the connection between, you know, feng shui and the energy of love.
That reminds me, I once went to visit my sister who was living in Hong Kong at the time, and all the buildings in Hong Kong, apart from the then Bank of China, are built in consultation with a feng shui expert. And she lived in this large block of flats, which was on a beach, just overlooking this beach. And the feng shui man had been consulted, and he said, you can't build your block of flats there because there's a dragon living up that mountain, and he'll no longer have access to the ocean. He won't be able to get down. He'll be blocked, and he'll be very angry, and bad things will happen. So they built this block of flats anyway, and they carved this enormous hole right in the middle of the building. This giant, it was very strange, square hole, so that the dragon would have access still to the ocean. That's how seriously they took it.
That's wonderful. It's such a great story. I can just imagine that block of apartments with a hole where you could actually have a view if you were standing on the beach looking up to the mountain.
You do.
That's wonderful. And, you know, it was interesting when Frank and I laid the map of the Bagua, which is what that beautiful slide that Frank made us for us today, the last week was, if we have that laid down on our house, we were so surprised to find that, you know, career where you enter at the house down at the bottom where it's black, we happen to have, Frank does this beautiful black glass that he has inserted into our door. And then to the left, where's knowledge, that just happens to be where our office is. And then the place of health, the green area, the wood area, to the left side on the Bagua map just happens to be where I keep my, you know, make my medicines and keep my healing supplements and things. And then where abundance is where our compost is.
Mm.
Which, of course, abundance is that's the from which the abundance of the garden springs. And then, you know, fame and reputation is out there in the garden at the patio, which We are both horticulturalists, and we love that. And then our bedroom just happens to be over by the marriage corner, and you know, children and creativity kind of by the south side, where there's a nice playful area of the yard. And then helpful people and travel is where my office is, where I do my medical intuitive work, and where we have our guest bedroom. So it's just kind of funny how that all worked out together, just purely by accident, and I was really glad for it.
Very good.
Yeah. So I wonder if you could show that next slide then. So this one says, this is a quote by Leo Bascaglia, and I love Leo Bascaglia. And he's that, you know, hugging guru.
Mm.
He believes in giving everybody a big hug. And this one says, love is life. And if you miss love, you miss life.
Mm.
Isn't that great?
How profound, yeah. Simple,
mm-hmm.
but profound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then a friend of ours, Patrick, gave me a wonderful little book not too long ago. It's called Feeling is the Secret by Neville Goddard. And it's one of the original writings on the power of prayer and the power of thought and how we can really, you know, dig right in deep and use our feelings to create our reality, and how it has a profound effect on our subconscious mind, and how we can use our conscious mind to direct our intention to our subconscious mind. And there's another slide. Maybe you could go ahead and show that one now, if you wouldn't mind.
Certainly.
This one is a quote by Barbara DeAngelis, and it goes, love is a force more formidable than any other. It is invisible. It cannot be seen or measured, yet it is powerful enough to transform you in a moment and offer you more joy than any material possession could. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, that's very nice. Josephine, we've had a comment from Anna in Woodside, and she writes as follows. Josephine, I think it's harder in today's society to experience love because of the gadgets. My cousin and I had a hairbrush to brush my grandmother's long gray hair and acres of land to play in, and an amazing grandmother who would tell us Italian stories at bedtime, filled with imagery and passion that no gadget could compete with. The slow quiet of life was rich with conversations between people and no gadget that was in between. Your tones in your voice was the music of the airwaves, and in that gigantic experience you experienced love, the interaction with people in the present moment. In our rush to look rich and have it all, we lost the beauty of time with people. We went to work and didn't come home until we were so tired that you didn't want to talk. Love is a powerful subject. Everybody is looking for it, but nobody is willing to stop and experience love with the person you're in the same room with. These are interesting times.
Oh, yes, Anna. Thank you so much. That's a really beautiful comment. And we've all seen young folks walking side by side down the sidewalk, and they each have their, you know, cell phones, and their ears are plugged into somebody else, and they're talking with some other friend who's not there. And, you know, it feels so distant to those of us who are observing, and it does seem to prevent connection. And, you know, I've known a lot of young people who walk around with the earbuds in their ears, and they're listening to something, and it does sort of discourage conversation in it. And yes, I'm so glad that they're enjoying their music, but it does sort of take away that connection that we long for. But, you know, all of this can be very easily remedied by just a simple invitation to them to engage one-on-one, or a touch, or, you know, something like that. And I think that the root cause behind it is that so many people are really shy, or that they feel that they're not lovable, or whatever it might be. But all we have to do is just open our own hearts to them, and they'll feel the love. Everybody's usually so hungry for it that they immediately respond with love and kind. So thank you so much for this wonderful observation, Anna, and for the beautiful story of your cousin and your grandmother. That was really lovely.
That was really lovely. So do you think there's something particular then about these electronic gadgets, or could it be anything?
Well, I think it could be anything. I think that, you know, when I was growing up, my dad would sometimes busy himself with things in the garage or something, and it might have been that he was not really able to, you know, feel as much as I might have wanted him to. And so I think that we all find these sort of little ways of sort of avoiding the, mm-hmm. the deeper feelings. And I think that it comes from that, you know, some of those, often from some of those childhood experiences of feeling abandoned or unloved or whatever it may be. And so,
but I mean, screens, they make it very easy to do that, don't they? If you don't want to interact with anyone else, you can just lose yourself in the other computer or the whatever it is.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I do it too. And I'm so grateful for Frank. He's so polite. He always, you know, if I'm around, he just stops what he's doing on the computer and says hello and engages. You know, it's a wonderful thing. And I can certainly learn from him more about that.
Yes, I certainly really appreciate those rare times when you have a long period where there's no computer at all, no internet or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was at Montana de Oro State Park today, walking along the coast. It was beautiful. Anyway, enough of that. We have another question. This one comes from Elena in Pasadena, and she asks, how can I increase the love in my life?
Oh, yes, beautiful. Well, I think the first thing to do is to love yourself. And when you love yourself, then your whole world opens up in love. I'm so glad you asked this question, Elena, because it's a really important one. And the other thing that I'm reminded of is when Ram Dass talks about love, he says that there is love 101. It's the basics, you know, like the college course. He says that what we want to do is realize that the doors to love open from the inside, that we are the ones who open the doors to love. When we open ourselves to love, when we open our willingness to love someone else, that then love can come to us. And that sometimes we tend to be, you know, a little bit more hold back with our love. We might not open ourselves up so much to it. We might say, well, you know, I'll love somebody when I have, you know, accomplished this in my life, or I've gotten a degree, or I've become, you know, worthy of somebody else's love, because I'm not worthy now. And that holds us back from love when we have approached love from that standpoint of view. And when we instead learn how to love ourselves just exactly as we are in a state of love, and we attract love to us. And also, you know, nothing is more attractive than that joyous, loving person. You know, it doesn't matter really what they look like or what they do. If they are loving and connected and joyous and happy, then we're attracted to that. That's something that really pulls us to them. And I did write a little 10 steps to self-love, and I'll just say briefly what they are, which the first one is to say, I love you, every morning in the mirror. This is something that I learned from Louise Hay, and it works really, really well. And if you can't say it, because sometimes it is hard for us to say this, then to say, I'm willing to learn to love you, and just exactly as you are. And I like to say my name. I love you, Josephine. I really love you, just exactly as you are. And then the next step is to forgive yourself, because forgiveness is a block to self-love. If we feel like we are too horrible to love because we've done something, you know, awful, well, you know, really, how bad is it? You know, I mean, did you murder somebody, or was it just that you weren't nice one day? You know, it's okay. We can forgive ourselves for most of these things, and in fact, for all of it. And so learning how to forgive ourselves is a really important door to open in order to love, to open ourselves to love. And then to, you know, practice really positive self-talk. So often in our minds we're running around grumbling and murmuring to ourselves about how terrible we are, or if we could only do this or that better, things would be better. But if we practice instead, change those mental habits and practice instead loving thoughts and being grateful to ourselves for every little thing that we do well, that really changes our lives. And then, like I was mentioning with Fran's question earlier, to treat ourselves gently, to do loving things for ourselves, to give ourselves the gift of, you know, a massage or a walk out in nature, that sort of thing. I like to say to myself that I am my own darling precious child, and I lovingly meet all of my needs. And then thinking good thoughts, you know, replacing the scary thoughts, you know, with I like to think of somebody on a stage and getting out a shepherd's crook and dragging those scary thoughts off and replacing them with really nice ones. And being grateful, you know, that's a wonderful good thought to replace a scary thought with, gratitude. And then also, you know, nothing works better than helping others. You know, if you see something that somebody could use some help with, when we do something nice for someone else, we feel so much better. And then honoring our body, so eating well and getting plenty of sleep and lots of fresh air and sunshine and I like to do a healing checklist, and I give myself a gold star when I've done well. And then, you know, as is the basis for spirituality, we want to laugh and have fun and make new friends and learn some jokes and be playful and do something that makes you smile every day. And then, well, really important, to do what we love, you know, at least once a day. Do something that we really love, what we really want to do. You know, I think so often, and I know that I was raised with this, point of, you know, work first, play later. You know, do your work first. And now I really realize that it's so much more important for me to do what I really love first, to give that top priority in my day, whatever it is that I'm inspired to do, even if it's just a little thing, and even if it's a big thing, at least getting started with it. And then just to remember love, to remember that we are loved, we are loving, and we're lovable. And to say, you know, I really love you every day, just exactly as you are. So that's how we enter into that river of self-love. And then from that self-love, in comes the rest of the love in our lives. It's like we have to open that door first. We have to open it from the inside and start with loving ourselves. And then when we are loving ourselves, we are attractive, and love just naturally flows to us. It's a part of our reality. Yeah, so I hope that helped, Elena.
Thank you so much, Josephine. Unfortunately, we really are running out of time now.
Uh-oh.
So it's time for me to say that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website. Simply go to stepintomagic.com and click on radio. So, Josephine, before we close, are there any parting words that you'd like to share?
Well, yes, there are. And, Tony, I wonder if you could show that last slide that we have for today. And this one says that it is the illusion of our separation from love that is the cause of all of our suffering. And I think it's really true, and that is always an illusion, because spirit is always with us, and we are always loved, not only by the spirit guides around us, but by the universe, and hopefully by ourselves as well. So I'd like to thank you all for the gift of your time. It always brings a smile to my face to know that you're listening, and I'd like to close with this little blessing. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a pleasure talking with you this evening, and I trust that everyone listening has learned something useful about developing psychic ability and love as a subtle energy. This has been show number SE4-12.13. We look forward to having all of you join us in the new year, as we will be covering how keeping our bodies healthy and clear helps us to access greater clarity in our psychic ability. And do please, if you enjoy the show, tell your friends.
Thank you for allowing me to share with you about this most important topic of the power of love. You know, whatever we focus our attention on becomes more rich and full in our lives. And as we focus on love, we open our hearts and we open to the truth of our being. And this frees us to embrace all of our natural sensory perception with the guiding influence and total protection of love. And there's nothing that protects us more than love and joy and inner peace in our hearts. So I'd like to say a big thank you to everyone who has joined in or listened. As each of us grow, the whole world grows, and we raise the planetary vibration when we come together in ways like this for the highest good. So Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. I hold you all in light and love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.